go. That's the birthday. That's the birthday. Yo, today's show is sponsored by MDVIP, an innovative approach to personalized primary care where high-touch practices and higher-tech tools help make healthier lives happen. For like over 1,000 docs and 250,000 patients, find out if that stuff is right for you, MDVIP.com.
I love you, MDVIP!
Yo, Z-Pack, this episode is made possible by the generous sponsorship of Athena Health. Athena Health partners with hospital and ambulatory clients to drive results. They offer network-enabled medical record, revenue cycle management, patient engagement, care coordination, and population health services to build health 3.0. Yo, get back to the work you love doing. Athena Health, free up.
I love Athena too!
What up, fam? What do you think of our intros, man? Like, are those not the best sponsor intros you've ever heard with Tom in the background going, I love you, MDVIP! Tom, what's up?
It's true. I do love MDVIP and Athena Health because they are changing the game.
You know what, Tom? You think Tom is kidding, but they may actually be changing the game. Guys, today we're super excited because every time we do a show, we think, what's the Health 3.0 angle on this? How is this going to prevent burnout in caregivers? How is this going to improve patient care? How is this going to build a connected, collaborative, outcomes-driven, repersonalized healthcare system that we always talk about when we're talking about that progression from that old school art of medicine 1.0 that didn't have much science or technology with it, to 2.0, which is nothing but science and technology and no heart, no human heart, just pure de-analogized MP3 that doesn't even sound very good, to 3.0, which is repersonalized medicine that transcends all of this. And today we have a sponsor and a guest that are helping us understand one way of accomplishing that. Dr. Lawrence Gassner is an internist for almost 30 years. A good portion of those years were spent in 1.0. And a good portion of those were spent burning out in 2.0. And now he's found his own 3.0, and we want to talk about it today. It's a company and an integrated care network called MDVIP. Dr. Gassner!
Hi.
How you doing, brother?
I'm good. How are you?
You're straight out of Phoenix, right?
Pretty much.
Yes.
Via California, but yes.
Via Cali? Where in Cali were you from originally?
San Fernando Valley. I'm a Valley boy.
Oh, gag me with a spoon. I love it. Yes, I'm old. Yes, I'm old, people. So, Dr. Gassner, like, you, the reason that we got connected is we were looking for people who are really working to transform primary care in particular, because if you actually prevent disease, then you actually squeeze the rest of the spend. Doesn't mean we don't like specialists or hospital care, urgent care, radiology. It just means we want less of it, and we want it to be more effective. So how did you start in your path to medicine, and what ultimately brought you to this version of yourself that you're practicing now?
I was a traditional community-based, well, first I was an academic physician, chief resident, teaching. I was on staff at a hospital, and I did that really for about 7 years, and I went into private practice for about 15 to 18 years. Where I was chief of medicine, then chief of staff of a hospital, and gradually just became more and more exhausted with the treadmill. I mean, I was 50 years old. I knew based upon internal medicine, you know, there was no retiring for me anytime soon. I had to find a way to keep doing this, what I did best. Yeah. And I was tired and I was about ready to drop out, and I was looking for an alternative while still being able to practice. The entire time I practiced as a traditional physician, I was always under pressure, meaning always felt like I was rushing patients, always felt like I wasn't getting enough time with patients, always feeling guilty. But bottom line is, you know, when that is the environment you're in, you just adapt to it, which means you just say, you know, I'm sorry, I can't answer those questions right now, and it'll have to be another time. I mean, what can you do?
Let me ask you a question. So in that environment, because I've been there, we've all been there, right? In this, I call it Health 2.0. It's just a volume-based mill where it's click, 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 and get through the day. Did you ever think, you know, you found a way to practice better, which we're going to talk about, but did you ever think, I'm done with this. I'm going to do something else. You said you were 50.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I was the chief of staff of a hospital. I was on the board of directors of the hospital. So I ended up getting offers for administrative positions, which, you know, on the surface, which meant I would have no longer practiced medicine, were attractive. But in my heart of hearts, I said, I suck at that. I hate these meetings. Can't do this stuff. So I needed to find a way to continue to do what I thought I was good at. Unfortunately, I was really frustrated in practicing medicine in that medicine 2.0. I mean, it was very frustrating. And it was just really just luck. You know, 12 years ago, I started getting some mailers from MDVIP. It just so happened that one of my patients in Arizona was the first MDVIP doctor in Arizona. And he said, you know, you should look into this system. I had never heard of it. I didn't know what the hell they were talking about. This was 12 years ago. But I gave it a shot, and I started, I met some of the people there, started talking with them, started talking to some of the doctors. And of course, my initial feeling was, you know, these guys have drunk the Kool-Aid. I mean, this is, you know, these guys are, they're way too smiling, way too happy. This is, they're not on the same planet that I'm on. They're not doing what I'm doing. But, you know, desperation causes you to take a chance. Bottom line is you take a risk. And I took a risk. I ended up converting now 10, almost 11 years ago to MDVIP. And it's, MDVIP is a national model that allows me to maintain full autonomy. It is my own practice, but it is a model that has allowed me to practice a system that is, at least for me and the other doctors within the organization, which is now about 950 doctors, it's a model that fits much better with what I always wanted to do.
So,
which is more time with patients.
So is that the bottom line? Because, you know, when you hear MDVIP, many people think concierge medicine, wealth care, people who can only afford some exorbitant fee to have a concierge doc.
MDVIP, we like to consider it as a personalized primary or personalized preventive medicine. To me, it is Marcus Welby transported to the 21st century. And I say that because I'm allowed to be Marcus Welby, but bottom line is we're still using the technology that's available today. It is no more wealth care than the smartphone I'm talking to you on is a wealth phone, because the price is essentially the same. Now, 15 years ago, if you told me I was going to pay $100, $120 a month for a phone, I'd say, what are you, insane? Now I don't think twice about it because I need my phone and use it. That's MDVIP. The cost of MDVIP is not just for wealthy people. You have to find a value in it, of course. And if you find value, it is the cost of a smartphone per month. That's what it is.
And what that money does, that membership, and remember, I'm an adherent to a membership model primary care. That's what we did at Turntable.
Sure.
And what that does is it allows you to keep a patient panel smaller. It allows you to leverage technology to help you care for patients and actually have a virtual kind of integrated network. So all of MDVIP across the country shares some sort of data and understanding and best practices.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I just give you a quick example. I just got a call today. MDVIP as a national network has a reciprocal care agreement. So any of my patients who are someplace else who need to see a doctor can see an MDVIP doctor just like they're a member of my practice. Mm. So today I got a call from a doctor in Nebraska, an MDVIP doctor. He's got a patient who spends 1 week a month in Arizona. And that patient happens to just have been diagnosed with a colon cancer. The patient wants to have a surgery in Arizona, recuperate in Arizona as opposed to winter in Nebraska. He asked me to find him a colorectal surgeon. And then he said, for follow-up, would you follow this patient if he's there for a week a month so we can just handle things in Arizona until he comes back to Nebraska? The answer is absolutely yes. That's how it works.
Let me ask you a crazy question related to that. The electronic health records, are they connected? Or can you share data? How does that work?
Well, if a lot of us use Athena, just so happens that MDV,
And they're a co-sponsor of the show, and we didn't even plan this, Tom. We didn't even plan this, and it turns out they use our co-sponsors.
It's what you would call synergy, people.
Tom says it's what we would call synergy. That's right. That's what we do, people,
hey,
here.
Can you get Dr. Gassman to go through a typical day for him as an MDVIP doc? A lot of people are interested in the comments. Like, what's his day look like now that he's made the switch?
So Tom is saying a lot of people in the comments, and we can talk about Athena and the EHR, we can wrap that up, but then they want to know what your typical day after you switched from 2.0 to an MDVIP model with a panel that maxes at around 600 and you have time to spend, what does that day look like for you? Because our providers really want to know. But finish your thought on the Athena piece and the EHR.
So those any physician that is using Athena within MDVIP, of course, we can exchange records if we need to. So I'll give you an example. The physician in Nebraska will shoot me the most recent annual wellness exam for this patient. Will shoot it over to me before I see this patient. So I've got essentially what I need. There are physicians within MDVIP because MDVIP doesn't tell you what to do. So we have physicians that are on other electronic records platforms that they've been on before. You know, we just will fax something over to them back and forth if we need to.
Old school. So like the typical sort of.
Right.
Yeah. Now here's a question. You said they don't tell you what to do. Why not? Do they allow autonomy? What's the principle there?
The MDVIP is essentially a guiding model. We follow certain criteria. Those criteria are a maximum panel of 600 patients. The patients all really can get a hold of us. Each one of these our doctors can get a hold of us when they can. Our standard appointment time for a follow-up visit is 30 minutes. Each patient, the foundation of the model is an annual wellness exam where we cover really the patient's history and issues and come up with a personal plan for moving forward for the next year. We do that for each and every patient, whether they feel like they need it or not. That's what the annual fee covers. So in a given day, I'll do two or three of those wellness exams in addition to seeing acute patients.
Right, right.
As far as does MDVIP tell me what to do at all, they have nothing to do with my practice. I consider MDVIP like a computer security system, like Symantec, like they just run in the background. They're there if I need them. If I have questions on insurance, if I have questions on legal issues, if I have questions on IT, we work so much with Athena that MDVIP has their own Athena people, meaning that they're IT people that work with Athena. So if we have questions, we go to the MDVIP people. But otherwise, there's no one in my office. There is no productivity. There is no, you know, I'm never talking to an administrator. There are no administrators.
What?
Yeah.
You shut up, Dr. Gassner. No administrators?
There are no zero administrators.
So you're running your own practice with the benefit of their infrastructure.
Each doctor is running their own practice throughout the country. MDVIP has nothing to do with how I greet my patients. They have nothing to do with...
Wait. You mean they don't give you scripts like, hello, I am Dr. Gassner. I'm here to serve you like a robot slave. You don't get that.
We do not get that. Now, what they will do is sort of set up a big brother, little brother system. So, you know, even though I feel like I'm a young pup, I'm actually getting up there in years. And so if a new doctor joins and has questions about how it all works, they can call me and run stuff by me. I can show them, you know, it's no different than teaching an intern how to do an arterial blood gas. I mean, it's that kind of thing.
There's mentorship, there's teaching, there's connection.
Exactly. There's no script. A lot of doctors, when you switch from the traditional model, just like I did, to a model like this, you say, well, why would a patient pay me for doing the same thing that I've been doing for the last 20 years when they didn't pay me to do it? And of course, that's a big question that I get all the time. And the answer is they are, you know, number one, they're paying to continue seeing you. But number two, they're interested in what you are going to be bringing to the table. And when a physicians are, to me, are inherently very, very good people that are stressed and rushed.
Yeah.
And as a result, they are not able to function in an ideal setting for what most of them are designed to do. When you give them the time, suddenly you become a very, very good physician again.
Well, Go ahead.
So when I say give them the time, I have the time to research. I have the time to listen. When you say, you know, when I saw a patient for 15 minutes at a time or 10 minutes at a time, I would say, well, I had time to listen to my patients. I knew my patients. Well, these same patients that then came to me in this new model, meaning most of my patients that started with me as a MDVIP physician were my patients already.
Yeah.
They transitioned with me. When I spent an hour and a half with them doing an annual wellness exam, I had so much time to get to know them so much better, develop even a greater sense of trust. When you develop trust with your patients, it is amazing what you can find out.
Wow. I mean, I mean, obviously I'm an adherent to that. And the question is that actually brings me to a point. And Tom, I'll get you through the walkthrough towards the end of this because I want to do that.
Yeah.
But I want to also hit these important points because in the MDVIP system, patients pays a membership fee somewhere between $1,600 and some dollars and $1,800 right. some dollars a year to have that access, the wellness exam, and to keep your patient panel lower. Yeah. You're still billing insurance, though, on the individual visits.
The answer is not on the annual wellness exam, but if a patient, I tell my patients, this is not Poncho's all-you-can-eat buffet. this is not, I pay a fee and I see you as many times as I want. It's not that type of a model.
Yeah.
The annual wellness exam is covered in all the labs and all the testing that we do. That's covered by the fee.
Yeah.
Membership is covered by the fee, but with Medicare, with commercial insurance, we participate with all insurance plans. So when you come in for a follow-up for hypertension, you have a severe sinus infection, you just twisted your ankle, you have a strange ditzel and you don't know what to do with it, those we bill insurance or we bill Medicare, yes.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, you know, all these things that you're talking about, having more time with your patients, having technology that gets out of the way a bit, working with an infrastructure that supports you with mentorship, with collaboration, and then getting to know your patients in a way that you couldn't have done in the old model.
Exactly.
That seems to be a response to me to something that MDVIP recently sponsored in conjunction with another group, a survey that looked at 200 primary care physicians who were not practicing in a 3.0 model, but were back in a 2.0, 1.0 hybrid model. So what we call legacy physicians, docs who are in the old system, clicking the boxes to please the bean counters. And they asked them a bunch of questions, and they were really interesting. In fact, Logan is going to put this up, and you and I can chat. So here's an infographic that our audience can see, Dr. Gassner, that shows some of the results of this survey. And it's titled, Our Nation's Doctors Are Not Well, and That Matters. Now, ZPAC, you guys know that matters because until we take care of the caregivers, our patients are going to get crappy care because we're going to be pressured. And everything Dr. Gassner said about physicians being good people who are stressed, who are pressured, who are tired. And that's what the survey showed. So it showed that 83% of doctors admit that they don't have enough time. They wanted more time to spend with their patients. And even though that's a kind of a staggering statistic, there's 54%, more than half of doctors, write prescriptions or refer patients. These are primary care doctors not operating in a membership model. Refer patients because they don't have the time to do otherwise. Now think hard about that. Let's pull that slide down, Logan. And Dr. Gassner, when you were practicing in the standard model, did you find that the time pressures were such that it was easier to write a referral, it was easier to give a prescription than to get at the root cause of the suffering or the manifestation of illness or to really dig into it and manage it as a PCP?
Absolutely. It was, you know, the temptation is there, but there's, and I trained in a facility where you essentially were on your own a lot.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've trained in a county type facility where they just kind of turned us loose and said, good luck, boys, see you in the morning. boys and girls. So I learned to think on my feet, but, you know, I use the example of a patient comes in with a viral respiratory infection. Patient comes in with a viral sinusitis. They want an antibiotic. Why do they want an antibiotic? Because they got something going on this week and they need to be well. They need to be well in 2 days. And, you know, I can sit and explain to them or I could just give them the standard magic Z-Pack.
Yep.
And off they go. They're happy. And then they go tell their friends, well, I had this infection. My doctor gave me antibiotics and I got better in 3 days. It's like, yeah, you did. And if I would have given you nothing, you would have gotten better in 3 days, most likely.
Maybe 2 days because you wouldn't have gotten the C. diff.
Right. Now you've got diarrhea. So there you go.
Exactly.
But, you know, that temptation was always there because it was easier.
Yeah.
I mean, sometimes you needed to get the patient out the door because in the old model, the reality is there were always patients stacking up. And you also knew that, you know, I tell doctors that are interviewing for this, interested in this model, an example, historically, when I was in my practice, I would look at my schedule every morning. If it wasn't full, I mean, it had to be full. If it wasn't full, then really for that day, I wasn't going to make that much money.
Yeah.
I'm talking about by the time I covered expenses, I knew how many patients I had to see to cover my overhead. I knew how many patients I had to see to actually bring home some money. And of course, my overhead in a typical practice model, if you practice for yourself, which is I was never an owned practice, you pay everybody first. And then what's left, you get.
Right.
It's not complicated. Well, on days when I had openings, the reality was that was not necessarily a good day, even though it was a blessing. It wasn't a good day. And because you had a patient every 10 minutes or 12 minutes, if someone had multiple questions, you know, your hand is on the doorknob saying, "I'm sorry, Mrs. Smith, and I got to go."
Yeah.
Got to go.
We've all been there. Yeah.
Absolutely. You can't help it.
Well, so in the survey, it's that 41% of docs have contemplated quitting medicine as a result of these stressors. Now, that number doesn't surprise me, except that I think it's actually a little low. I think the number's actually higher. I think many of us have sat there and fantasized, if I could do anything, I would be a rapping physician and have a show on Facebook. Like those kind of things, right? And here, you know, here's the piece of that. When they look into the survey, can we throw the survey up again, Logan? When they look into it, the kind of things that really bothered people were, you know, some of the top things were administrative and time pressures and feeling like you're on a treadmill that's never slowing down, that's always speeding up. The idea that technology and EHR requirements, so click, 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 requirements are breaking people's spirits. We can put the slide down again. Thanks, Logan. Do you think in an MD-VIP model, you still have to document, you still have to bill
insurance? Absolutely. The requirements to document are no different for us than for anyone else. I was in a traditional model greater than 10 years ago when electronic records and maps and MACRA and MIPS and meaningful use 1, meaningful use 2, meaningful use 14, meaningful use 15. I mean, none of that stuff even existed. Mm. And it was still onerous. I can't even imagine now trying to spend an adequate amount of time with a patient to really listen to them at the same time document everything needs to be documented.
Yeah.
I mean, and of course, the requirements, you know, week to week, day to day, the requirements continue to change. And this is for primary care. That's all I can speak to, and they continue to get more and more and more onerous. There's no question about it.
Right, but the way that MD-VIP might mitigate that is you have a smaller patient size, you have support.
Oh, it's not a problem for me at all.
Yeah.
And the reason it's not a problem for me at all, because if you want, I can go now into what my typical day
What's your typical day?
So typical day, I start seeing patients at 8 in the morning, and I usually see patients until about 12:30 by the time they're out the door. I start again about 1:30 in the afternoon, 1:45, and I see patients until about 5:30. Hmm. Between 12:30 and usually 1:30, I am handling phone calls that have come in during the morning when I'm with patients. And so it's not very different from what it was historically, except that I will see an annual wellness exam. I personally spend 90 minutes with that patient in the morning. And then I see 30-minute follow-ups. I maybe have 5 30-minute follow-ups and my 90-minute physical. So on a busy morning, I have 6 patients.
Nice.
6 patients, 30 minutes per patient. I don't always have a full morning. And the key is with me, with MDVIP, one of the wonderful things is if I don't have a full morning, it is not a financial burden on myself because there are no productivity minimums. And I know that I don't have to be turning that wheel and generating those E&M charges over and over and over and over again. I don't have to. It's nice if I can, but if I don't have to, then I can address phone calls that have come in, research patient issues, call patients back within 5 to 10 minutes of them calling, which always freaks them out.
They're like, I had budgeted this call to come in 3 hours later.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. But the bottom line is, it is much easier as a physician to look good. It is fun to look good as a physician. It's not a bad thing.
Yeah. No, I hear you, man. That's exactly right. Well, you know, but I mean, related to that, though, do you feel like when you switch to the MD-VIP, like it's been better for you, it's better for the patients to stay with you? What about
Absolutely.
This issue of patient abandonment? Did you abandon this group of patients that you left behind to do this?
One of the biggest issues that physicians that are considering MD-VIP have to grapple with is, what do I do with the patients that don't come with me? And MDVIP has always been very, very concerned about that. They make it a point that you cannot open with MDVIP unless you have a solid continuation plan for your patients that choose not to go with you. Mm-hmm. Whether that is MDVIP bringing a new physician into your town, bringing a new physician into your practice, helping you find a physician to accept your patient. So although you are leaving the patients, they, if they choose not to come with you, or if they cannot financially come with you, or for whatever reason they don't feel you're worth it, you, whatever that reason may be, they are always now set up with a new physician. And doctors that are trying to transition into MDVIP, meaning they have decided it's what they want to do, but they don't have a transition plan set up for their patients, cannot end their old practice until they do. So, you know, the doctors that are concerned about abandoning patients are the kind of doctors that MDVIP is looking for. I mean, it's bottom line is that's the kind of doctor you want.
Well, let me ask a question. So if, okay, you're transitioning your old patients, you have minimum 30-minute visits, you do the annual wellness visit, they pay the membership fee, you're also billing commercial insurance and Medicare like you normally would, but there's less,
yes,
there's less pressure to have volume because there's the support of the membership fee, fewer,
exactly,
patients, more time. But here's a question. So they have 24/7 ability to reach you via cell phone. That's terrifying, okay, to me. Is that terrifying to you?
It is. When I was in a traditional model and we would share call every 4 to 5 weeks, I would cover for 8 to 10 doctors, both our group and another group. When I was on call, I'd be on call for 7,000, 8,000 patients, maybe 2,000 of which I knew well, 1,500 I'd heard of, another 6,000 I'd never heard of before. Absolutely terrified. Mm. I have been on call, other than 2 weeks ago, I've been on call for 10 years straight. Not one night off call. Vacation, stay on call. Bike riding, stay on call. Golfing, stay on call. Skiing, I stay on call. Because I'm only on call for my patients now. Yeah, you got the scary face, but there's no reason to have a scary face. I sleep every night. I don't get calls in the middle of the night. It is amazing what can happen when your patients are able to get their questions answered during the day. They don't bother you.
So,
and of course, what happens is, it's a transition phase for both you and your patients. They have to be accustomed to getting a hold of you when they call you. And when my patients call me, I answer the phone and they say, "Why did you answer?" I said, "Because you called me."
So we had the same experience with Turntable Health. When you give patients access, when you have time in the day to spend with them, when they have support, when you have support to help you with it, you get less calls.
Right. I mean, I use this, you know, every time I use this analogy, the MDVIP executives kind of squirm. But I use the same analogy because it's a very good analogy.
Let's make them squirm.
Your sphincter tone and your patient's sphincter tone will just do this. Click, 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 click. And it goes from a pressure of about 9 to a pressure of 2. And you relax and they relax.
And diarrhea.
That's exactly.
Explosive diarrhea.
One. I literally, in 10 years, and I could say that because I've been in this model for 10 years, in 10 years, I probably had 2 calls after 10 p.m. at night. I get a couple calls on the weekends. Now, keep in mind, and this is, you know, through no choice of mine, hospitalists displaced me from taking care of my own patients in the hospital.
Sure.
A decade ago, that was one of the reasons why I came to MDVIP.
That's my people. That's my people right there. Okay, don't you talk smack, Larry Gassner.
as I was saying to my son, back in my day, but the bottom line is, you know, it was, you change, you roll with the punches.
Yeah.
As an internist, you know, 95% of my training was in inpatient medicine. A couple, 10 years ago, I got letters from the hospital saying, you know, we really need these hospital group for other doctors, and we pretty much have to have the mandatory hospitalists because that's how they're going to stay with us, and we don't really need you anymore. Thank you very much for your service. And I'm like, well, you know, it's okay. It is what it is.
A great hospitalist that's paired with a great primary care doc where there's communication, that's a terrifying and powerful thing. And that's where I think the future might go, because you'll optimize for the clinic, but you only know, you know that patient better than I will ever know that patient.
Right. And I am, you know, it is that, that's a current breakdown in our system, at least in this town.
Agree. Here too.
Right. So, you know, but is it, suddenly you're frozen.
Oh, am I frozen? You're still there,
yeah,
though. You're still
okay.
There. You don't need to see me. I'm ugly, Larry. Let me ask you a question. So... The patient satisfaction rate is over 90%. I imagine they're using Net Promoter or some other score. So patients are super happy.
Yep.
There's a 90+% renewal rate year to year.
So that's true.
In across MDVIP. So that's obviously true. The patients really love it. I actually have a story. So of MDVIP. Now remember, I'm running a competitor in this town, Turntable Health.
Yep.
At the time. Now we're like a direct primary care, so a little lower fees, but less of the sort of high touch stuff that you guys do, like the annual wellness exam and that kind of thing. We just kind of folded into our care. So anyways, I had a friend who had an MDVIP doc here in town, and he wanted me to tag along for the visit because he wanted me to experience what this was. So I went, and I sat there in a very nice office where the staff was super friendly. Everyone looks like they were treated well. I saw the doctor sit down at Athena, and he was looking at my friend while he was talking and typing, and he spent a good hour with his legs, you know, casually crossed on the chair in the patient consult room, talking to this guy, getting into his head, asking about everything from his business to his family to his health. And at the end, we got labs. They were right there in the facility. The nurse was super helpful and super nice, and everybody had a smile on their face. And the whole experience, I remembered leaving there and going, I've never encountered anything like this, and I've been in medicine for 15 years. And so to me, I wanted to sign up myself immediately. The thing is, I had a clinic and I had a talk at the clinic. Our clinic was fine too, but these are all different manifestations of what we call Health 3.0, repersonalized,
exactly.
Technology-enabled, collaborative care. Your model is one model that I think many doctors and many patients would resonate with, and that's part of the reason we're doing the shows. We want to spread the word that some of the myths about this stuff are not really true, and they've come out just from talking to you. But then the other thing is that we want to highlight bright spots of, okay, if MDVIP works for one way to reconnect doctors, maybe we can, in a legacy model, use technology like someone like Athena can build to actually help take some stuff off doctors' plates. But regulations have to change, billing requirements have to change.
So exactly.
All those things go in concert. But what are your thoughts overall on the future of all this, seeing what you're seeing now?
Well, certainly when I think of MDVIP, and I'm very, very lucky because MDVIP for me was the way I always wanted to practice medicine. It's just I didn't know that it was available. Is it the way that every doctor wants to practice medicine? No. Is it for every patient? Absolutely not. But it is certainly an option. It is not just for wealthy patients. We have many, many, many straight Medicare, commercial insurance, old, young. It just depends on what the value is to you.
Yeah.
And the goal of MDVIP is to allow doctors to be as happy and healthy as they can be so that they stay in practice. It allows patients to essentially try to maximize their health. We take care of complex patients, but we also try to prevent illness in patients. That's really what we do. And by having the time to do that, it has really allowed the network now of almost 1,000 doctors in 45 states, almost 270,000 patients. It's a lot of patients. It's not the population of the United States, but this is a lot of patients that keep coming back year after year. MDVIP is a model where you just sign up 1 year at a time. And of course, if we don't prove our mettle, nobody has to come back.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's free to go. This is not like an insurance where you say you only have one time to sign up and then you're stuck. You can do whatever you want, whenever you want.
Yep. I mean, they'll walk with their feet.
Absolutely.
If the care
isn't
good.
Votes. They vote with their feet.
And
everybody does.
And so will the docs. The docs could easily go to a different system. They could go become an employed physician somewhere. They could start a direct primary care clinic of their own, but they typically don't. The turnover is typically low.
I'm incredibly happy with MDVIP because it has allowed me to practice the type of medicine that I want. Now, I would have never, I don't have the entrepreneurial mind that you do, obviously. By that, I mean, I would have never started a practice on my own. It's just not something I ever had time for. But you know, the portion of my fee that I pay to MDVIP every year, and I do pay a portion to MDVIP, continues to support the legal work they do, the insurance work they do, the research that they do. We have medical directors that are always, we're always looking at cutting edge medical tests, different ways to identify illness, looking at genomic testing, looking at, you know, other cardiac risk stratification. For primary care, we're not going to start doing caths in the office.
Maybe.
But bottom line is, you know, we're not here to take the place of specialists. But we are here to, including, you know, finding a better way to work with hospitalists. I mean, hospitalists right. and hospitalized patients are a reality. It just isn't a system that, for me, works that great right now.
To me,
I wish it did.
To me, it seems like you're going to put pressure on specialists and hospitalists to have to move further up in their specialty. So, in other words, you can do more of the stuff in the time that you have than you used to be able to do, which means you don't have to refer people for a prostate exam to the urologist.
Oh, absolutely.
Which
oh,
I've no, seen, absolutely. I've seen it in this town, Larry. Like people will refer to a urologist because they don't have time or inclination to do a prostate exam. Now, Tom was going to ask me a question. What's that, Tom?
So Kim said, when I went to MDVIP, I thought at first it would be all wealthy patients that just didn't like waiting, which is what a lot of people's preconceptions are in the comments.
Yeah.
Which is shameful, Z-Pack. How dare you?
MDVIP, it's funny. And this is pretty much universal within MDVIP. When you would ask an MDVIP doctor, currently a legacy physician, thinking of switching to MDVIP, would he be able to, he or she be able to predict which patients would go from their traditional practice and follow them? And you try to say, I think these ones are going to be like me and these ones won't because this patient can't afford it. And this patient is a retired straight Medicare, retired school teacher, and I would love to have this patient continue with me, but I'm sure they won't show up. MDVIP doctors are wrong 75 to 78%
yeah.
of the time.
Yeah.
So I have many, many, many just straight retirees. I have young professionals. I have my share of what I would call a wealthier patient who values service. I have that, but I don't have any more than I really had in my traditional practice.
Well, Larry, so what Kim's comment goes on to say, it's fascinating. It agrees exactly with what you say. So she thought it would all be wealthy patients who didn't like waiting, but then what she found is it was largely middle-class patients who are so sick that they would be lost or stuck in a system without a doctor that has the time to be their advocate.
We get a lot of patients that have failed the system.
Yeah.
Or the system has failed them. Either, and it's usually, you know, the complaint is, or the fear is usually no one is explaining to me what's going on. There's too many doctors, you know, they have subspecialists, they have a lot of illnesses, and it's nice to be able to keep everything straight. I mean, I tell my patients, I will be the general contractor of your health.
Yeah.
My office will bulldog the subspecialists and make sure we get your records. We will have everything. We will have your surgical reports. We will have your biopsies. We will have it here so we can sit down and we can go over it. And if there's something that the subspecialist doesn't explain to you, I will either contact the subspecialist for you or we'll go over it.
And that's something that all primary care doctors are really entrusted to do. But in our new system now where we're pushed so hard, and again, this to throw up the survey one more time, Logan, if you don't mind. So I'm going to look at this survey again, Larry. Like, it's kind of absurd, and I want the Z-Pack just to look through this. This is what our primary care doctors feel. They're burning out. They're entertaining ideas of leaving medicine. They feel that everything from the EHR to the volume requirements, the fact they don't have time to spend with their patients, make them feel the sense of lack of personal and professional satisfaction. If an idea like, and we can take it down, Logan, if it's an idea like what you guys are doing through MDVIP and it's left you fulfilled and your patients fulfilled, and that's some of the comments that we're seeing too, you know, as Kristen Sater says here, as Z-Dog says, hate the system, love our patients, and that's basically what you're saying too.
Right.
So tweak the system, make it better for us.
Right, and I'm not saying by any stretch of the imagination that I'm any different of a physician than I was for the 20 years that I was in traditional medicine. Nor am I saying that I'm better than any other of the physicians that are in traditional medicine. What I'm saying is that I have been given an opportunity to be better. When you have more time and you're less rushed and you're able to relax, the patients sense it. You may think your patients think that you're cool as a cucumber. They sense when you're anxious. They sense when you are uncomfortable in the room with them. And that makes them uncomfortable.
Yeah.
I can assure you it makes them uncomfortable. And when you're able to make them more comfortable, as you experienced when you were sitting with that your friend and the MDVIP doctor that he was with, when that happens visit after visit after visit, it creates a whole different vibe that I'm telling you your patients are not accustomed to. And of course the doctors aren't accustomed to it either.
Yeah.
But it makes for a much happier doctor.
How are your staff, Dr. Gassner? Are they happy in this model?
My staff are very, very happy. I've had the same staff for a while. We've had the same staff for a while. You know, I'm able to have a smaller staff. That's one of the changes. I have one dedicated front office person. I have one dedicated back office medical assistant. I have two partners, so there's three of us. We're all MDVIP. My front dedicated front office person acts as the office manager for the entire office. One of the other dedicated front office people acts as the biller, and we use Athena billing, so we really don't have much other than reviewing a few things. And then we all split a front desk person, meaning we each pay a third. So my overhead has gone down, obviously. And now I don't have, you know, I do not have, because I never thought that was my strength, I don't have a DEXA scanner in my office. I don't do MRIs in my office. I don't do Botox, and I don't do cell vitamins. I could have done those things. You know, the pressure is on a lot of physicians to move into other revenue streams. That just wasn't my strength. I figured I wasn't very good at that. I'm good at what I do. That's what I wanted to do.
I love it. Let doctors be doctors, heaven forbid. And nurses be nurses, and MAs be MAs, and
right.
The whole nine. So, you know, Tom, are there other comments that you want to address, or should we start to let Dr. Gassner have the last word on you?
I think we can let Dr. Gassner wrap it up.
Yeah. So, Larry, look, there's kids coming out of school who want to go into primary care. They're scared. There's docs who are burning out in the 2.0 system that are scared. Let us know how and if MDVIP may be an option for some of them. And they can go to mdvip.com to learn more. But give us the last word on this.
Well, you know, certainly in my heart of hearts, if a model similar to MDVIP, which allowed patients to have a little skin in the game. Now, I know, you know, and this is during the current insurance crisis. Believe me, I am a victim myself of having to pay higher and higher and higher premiums. The problem with paying medical insurance is it doesn't get you anything. It doesn't get me a doctor. It just is a premium that I'm paying. With the MDVIP model, by allowing, kind of stepping outside of this current system, patients that have smaller practices that are able to really connect more with their patients, if I could have done this, well, this is the reason I did this is because it's going to allow me to practice probably into my early 70s, not because I have to, but because that isn't that far away, actually. But
soon I'll be 60 years old. My daddy be proud of his son.
It is not something that terrifies me. 10 years ago, the thought of continuing in the model that I was in absolutely terrified me. It was the type of thing that triggered really pretty deep soul searching and depression. You know, you talk about the definition of depression, helplessness, hopelessness. I'm like, that was me. Mm. I don't suffer from that anymore. I don't think I was ever clinically depressed. I was just pissed and I didn't know what to do. But I am confident now. I am confident that as long as this model allows me to continue, this is a way I can continue to practice good medicine for another decade. Right. And I wish I was smart enough to say, how can we make this more widespread? And of course, my feeling is that, you know, the reason there's a problem with primary care doctors, people going into primary care medicine, is because they're terrified that they're never going to be able to make enough money to pay off their loans.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's not an attractive field. If it wasn't so onerous, it would be a much more attractive field. This type of model makes it a much more attractive field. That's probably your type of model. It makes it more attractive. It's fun.
Repersonalizing, re-engaging, giving us time to be doctors, getting out of the way, enabling us with technology that doesn't suck. You described Athena as a bit of an iPhone of EHRs. It's still an EHR, so you still have to write really stupid notes.
Exactly.
And that sucks, and it's still technology, but it's better than quite a bit of the stuff that you've experienced. So why can't we just get better overall?
And I would say that, you know, the EHR is, I tell a patient, you know, they say, what's the side effect of this medicine that I'm taking? Well, you know, these are the pros, these are the cons. The pros have to far outweigh the cons for us to use it. Electronic records, to me, I like the old system better, where you dictated one page and everybody knew exactly what you were saying. But, you know, bottom line is, I couldn't access that from my home. I couldn't access that from a mobile location. I couldn't refill medications on the fly. I couldn't compare allergies. I mean, I certainly like that part of electronic records. Mm-hmm. Electronic records don't make doctors write crappy notes. That's all I can say. Doctors still are writing electronic medical notes. They're crappy. But you know, the electronic record isn't making the doctor do that. But a time constraint is making a doctor do that.
Yeah.
Fortunately.
Yeah, you're spot on. Larry, it has been a absolute pleasure talking to somebody who's broken through the 3.0 wall. And it's not for everybody, but maybe for a lot of docs who are looking to step off the treadmill. And that's why I think the survey is useful. So Z-Pak, I'm going to actually, in the blog post for this, which will be up tomorrow, you can watch this video anytime on Facebook, but I'll have a blog post where it'll have links to the survey results, links to MDVIP, et cetera, where you can learn more about this stuff. And listen, learn from it. If you want to build your own model, do it. Build a competitor. But the main thing is understand that these models actually exist, that they can transform our practice, make our patients healthier and have a better experience, and allow us to continue to practice in otherwise a system that would have destroyed us. And on that note, I want to thank Larry Gassner for kicking butt. He's based in Phoenix, internist for like 30 years, MDVIP doc, and a swell chap, as we say in the business. And Larry, we're going to roll out now with a couple of playouts. So just hang on the line and hang tight for me, and I'd love to just wrap up offline.
You got it. You got it.
Thank you, brother.
And listen up, Z-Pak. I can barely do ninth grade math. And even during this conversation, I figured out that this is a way to get money to primary care instead of spending it on bullshit. So if you listen to all this and you don't understand that, you're not part of our tribe. Go back and rewatch the episode.
I hate you so much, Tom Heine, over here, because you're so right. We out. Go, 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 go. That's the birthday. That's the birthday. Yo, today's show is sponsored by MDVIP, an innovative approach to personalized primary care where high-touch practices and higher-tech tools help make healthier lives happen for like over 1,000 docs and 250,000 patients. Find out if that stuff is right for you, MDVIP.com.
I love you, MDVIP!
Yo, Z-Pak, this episode is made possible by the generous sponsorship of Athena Health. Athena Health partners with hospital and ambulatory clients to drive results. They offer network-enabled medical record, revenue cycle management, patient engagement, care coordination, and population health services to build Health 3.0. Yo, get back to the work you love doing. Athena Health, free up.
I love it.